Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. I'm your host, Corey Fleck, along with Shadmar Quits. We are going to be focusing a lot on the precious metals, as well as at the tail end of this show. The final two segments of this hour, we're going to be focusing a bit more on some companies, and not just company interviews, analysts that we bring on the show, companies that they see opportunities in the resource sector. And let's face it, look, a lot of resource companies have sold off this year. Unfortunately, they continue to sell off this week, but when the sector turns, you do need to have a good idea of what stocks you like, and who knows, even be taking positions during this tax loss selling season, because as much as we wanted that to be pushed forward, unfortunately, the continued drift lower in prices does still open up more of that selling opportunity in some of these stocks. But first things first, we're going to focus on precious metals and some other commodities as we are chatting with Jeff Christian, managing partner at the CPM Group. Jeff, let's start off with gold, because gold, it was looking encouraging for gold throughout the first about 3 weeks of November, and then that whole bullish narrative, again, in the short-term sense, turned on its head as we had gold slice through a bunch of support levels and below that 1800 level. We are recording this about halfway through the day on Friday, and gold is bouncing back a little bit, sitting right around that 1780 level. Either way, gold's back below 1800. What's your takeaway, Jeff, from this continued pressure that, again, seems to be fairly consistent for gold throughout this year?
Well, it's really been throughout this year. You know, gold, I guess, really peaked in June or July, and it came down hard, fought its way back up in early November, and now, you know, we're $100+ below that. You know, our take is that, you know, you're in this trading range of maybe 1750 to 1800 right now. We saw 1811 earlier in the week. We're concerned that gold and silver are vulnerable to another leg down. And, you know, what do I mean by another leg down? I wouldn't be surprised to see gold, you know, break below. It got below 1770 on Thursday. It's back above it as we're talking right now. But I would not be surprised to see another leg down that could take gold down as low as 1750. Now, you know, you're seeing a lot of investors who are expressing a lot of confidence, at least they're voting with their dollars, confidence in the economy and in the stock market. But you're also seeing a lot of other investors, you know, over the last several days, there were net additions into the ETFs. So you have any number of investors who are saying, okay, 1770, 1780, these are good price levels at which to add to my gold positions. But right now there's an overwhelming bearishness, and so I would not be surprised to see the prices spike down during December and then, you know, sort of recover in January, February.
Well, Jeff, that's what I was going to ask you, kind of on a seasonality basis, and I know it changes from year to year, but there's generally that sell down into the end of the year, and then that what we call the Q1 run, where January, February, there's a little bounce in the precious metals, but it's been really range bound for so long, almost a year now. What do you think would be the catalyst that could actually get more generalist investors interested in the precious metals, and what would get gold enough juice to break out of the range that it's been in on a positive move higher?
It's really hard to say. You know, I mean, you've already got very low nominal interest rates. You've got very low real interest rate, negative real interest rates. Inflation has picked up. You know, all of the things that should be stimulating investment demand for gold is not necessarily stimulating investment demand for gold. I do think that what you'll see over the course of 22 is very nasty politics in the United States. And very nasty international affairs, China versus the U.S., China versus Canada, China versus Europe, Russia versus Europe and the United States. I think that, you know, we've been telling our clients for a couple months now that we think that political factors, both domestic and international, may well be much more important in 2022 than economic and financial market trends. You know, the other thing to watch out for is financial market stability. You know, while interest rates are low and the stock market's high and the economy is recovering in a relatively fair way, that doesn't necessarily change things with the deficit spending and the debt levels, both on a sovereign level and on a corporate and private individual level. And you could see some financial market instability. There's nothing on the horizon that we're looking at, but we're just, you know, historically, that's one of the things that shakes the tree and causes investors to start saying, I should be owning more gold and silver. So we're kind of watching for that. But what we're really focusing on are the political factors, both domestic and not just domestic in the U.S., domestic in the U.S. and China and parts of Europe, and international politics. I think that that's the area that we're watching right now to sort of see what's going to change that's going to cause investors to say, okay, that's that. Now, I will say one other thing. I mean, people, I don't know how many people tell me, yeah, why is gold so low? Gold is basically at record levels. I mean, it got up to a record high on an intraday basis in August of 2020, and it's come down significantly from that. But if you look at a long-term gold price chart, prices at 1770, 1780 are close to those historic highs. And on an annual average basis, it's been very high. So I don't quite understand the negative attitudes toward gold or silver for that matter in the market. You know, I think there might be some overly enthusiastic expectations as to what gold and silver should be doing.
I think that's a good way of outlining it, because really, if you look at the gold price, entered the year around 1900, spiked right at the beginning of the year, and then dropped very quickly after that. But still, 1900 to where we are now, 1780, it's down about 7% this year, which you would sure feel like it's down 20%, which is what the stocks are down. GDX is down 20%. But yeah, 7% pullback. Look, the problem is gold's been beaten by practically every other market and sector out there this year. I know that there's been other sectors that have underperformed gold, but gold's been a laggard in that sense because people are making money elsewhere. How much does that play into the psychology and the reason why gold is so unloved right now?
That's exactly it. And it's a very complex relationship. You know, people talk about, well, the relationship between stocks and gold, stock prices and gold prices. And the relationship is actually very low. I mean, you know, over time, it's negative 4%, you know, but even if you just look at it since the Great Recession, you know, it's negative 7% against the S&P and negative 8% against the Dow Jones, changes in the gold price. You know, and that's because it's a very complex relationship. There are times when stock prices are high, and that actually correlates with high gold prices. And that's because people are long stocks, stocks are doing very well, and the investors are nervous. So they start moving some of their assets into gold. The opposite's happening right now. Stocks are very high, and the nervousness that we saw, you know, and we did see nervousness in May and June, which was, you know, contributed to that rise in the gold price during that period of time. Investors are saying, okay, stocks is doing well, and I'm worried because they're doing so well, and it doesn't make sense given the economic environment, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now they're sort of saying, okay, stocks are high, and I'm not that nervous about it because, yeah, we've had a couple of nasty spikes down, but the equity markets bounce right back. And, you know, for all of the weakness that we've seen in the last two or three weeks in the Dow Jones and the S&P 500, they're back to levels that we saw at the beginning of November in the case of NASDAQ, the S&P, and probably October or September levels for the Dow. So investors are not nervous right now about the fact that the stock market's very high. If that nervousness returns, then you could see investors start moving back into gold and the gold price would rise again. Why would that nervousness return? It's probably going to be some sort of political development out of Washington.
Well, Jeff, let's pivot over to gold's scrappy little brother, silver. And it's a precious metal as well, but it's also a hybrid metal in the sense that it's also an industrial metal. It seems to be tethered more to the commodity sector as a whole and more to the movements in copper and nickel and other base metals. How do you see the setup in silver, and how do you see it playing out as we move into the end of the year and beginning of 2022?
Yeah, I mean, silver's been even weaker than gold. And my view, again, is it's also set itself up for the possibility of another big spike down. And I think, you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see silver spike down to $21. I think it's about 22 right now, I think. So it's
we're pretty much there, Jeff. We're in the low 22s already. That's not much of a move down.
But I was saying this, you know, I was saying this 2 weeks ago when the price was $25. So I do think that, you know, silver is showing much greater weakness, and you're seeing the weakness in investment demand. You're seeing very high inventories. And you also have, you know, maybe it's a direct result of the silver squeeze nonsense in the first quarter. There are a lot of people who are disenchanted with silver. And again, I'd say, okay, it's $25, but or it's $22, but, you know, compare that to where the price was a year ago. You know, you compare the silver price to the annual average silver price. And, you know, on an annual average price, the silver price is up 27% year to date, right? And people are sitting there saying, oh, it's so weak, it's so low. And you say, what do you mean it's so weak, it's so low? It's up 27% on an annual average, and the price is much higher than it was a year ago. And they say, yeah, but it's not $100. I mean, I've been told that the squeeze was going to drive it to $100 or $300 or $700, and it's not there. It's like these irrational expectations that were based on nothing but a sugar high are causing a lot of investors to be disenchanted with silver when they really should be happy. Yeah. I mean, if you think about it, the average price of silver last year was $20. It's the average year to date through November is $25.50. That's pretty good. That's a pretty good return. Yeah, maybe it doesn't match the Dow Jones, but compared to silver shares or gold shares, it's doing pretty well. It's an irrational expectation that's causing disenchantment for now.
Yeah, I think the problem is, too, Jeff, silver is ending this year, unless we get a big spike at the end of the year, close to some of the lowest levels of the year, right? The lowest level silver hit this year was 21.41 right before October. We're closing in on that level. I think people are depressed simply because, they're seeing that downtrend and they're seeing how weakly silver is closing this year, right? It's not a positive outlook for at least the near term turning the corner here.
Yeah, on a short-term basis, yeah. I mean, you know, a lot of our work is for producers and institutional investors who take a long-term view. Shorter-term investors get very short-tempered with us because we talk about, well, yeah, you know, the average price is very up, very high. That's what matters to a producer. That's what matters to a fabricator that's using silver in some sort of manufactured product. And that's what matters really to long-term investors. And it's not these spikes higher and lower. But again, I do think that a large part of the disenchantment with silver, which is reflected in the lower price, has been people who, you know, they drank the Kool-Aid in the first quarter and they thought that the price would be $100 by now. And, you know, it's not, you know.
Yeah, we've been in this sector long enough to know that those $100 or $500 calls for silver, you should be running away from those type of commentators, because maybe one day they'll be right, but that's not a guarantee anytime soon. Jeff, you did mention that the guys you deal with, these longer term funds, these larger investors looking at the longer term outlook, why are they still then so encouraged by precious metals when they have been going through a year and a half correction and have been lagging every other sector?
Well, I think that, you know, first off, a lot of them bought earlier. You know, they didn't buy in the first quarter of this year during all the hoopla. They bought, you know, last year or 2 years ago or 3 years ago. So they're still sitting on pretty good profits, but they take a longer term approach. So they don't necessarily look at price charts. They look at the macroeconomic environment, the financial market stability, all of the new regulations that are coming down in the U.S., Canada, Europe, China, in terms of financial market regulations that are raising not only the costs of being a banker or a broker, but also the uncertainties as to what, you know, what are the unintended consequences of some of these regulations, especially like the shift away from LIBOR, which is coming down the pike, and the BIS thing. And so they look at a lot of these macroeconomic factors. They look at global economic factors. They look at political issues. And, you know, there's this view that relations between China and the rest of the world are going to get more hostile. And it doesn't matter what the Chinese do, because other countries don't trust them. And that lack of trust is being reflected in policies, which then exacerbates the Chinese lack of trust in everybody else. And so, you know, these longer term investors look at these global political, economic, and financial trends, and they say it doesn't make sense to have all of your eggs in the stock market basket, which is overvalued, and the bond market basket, which is also overvalued, you know, with historically low and negative rates that are probably not going to change anytime in the near term. So the longer term investors, a lot of the people that we deal with, are not fazed by, you know, the fact that the gold price dropped $80 in the last 3 weeks, or that the silver price is down $8 from its intraday peak 9 months ago, 10 months ago.
Well, Jeff, that's good to hear that they're taking the more long-term approach. And as you've mentioned, the metals prices as they sit today are fine for the producers, and they're historically pretty high prices. One sector that's been really interesting and kind of bifurcated are, I guess, the last two precious metals, even though they're really more industrial metals, and that's platinum and palladium. Palladium went on a crazy run higher over the last 2 years, and platinum is really depressed. It's depressed relative to palladium, and it's depressed relative to gold. So what do you make of the PGMs here in the current setup?
You know, we've been saying for some time that we thought that there'd be a reversal of fortunes between platinum and palladium. You know, platinum was dead in the water between $800 and $1,000 from 2015 until earlier this year. It was just in that range. And palladium just went from strength to strength, from, you know, $700 to $800 to, you know, I don't know, $4,000 or something at its peak. And we've been saying for some time that we thought on a long-term basis that you'd see a reversal of fortunes. Well, you've seen that, and palladium has come off. And platinum, you know, broke over $1,000 and it made a run up to $1,300. It's now back to $924, which is a little bit surprising. I think what you're seeing there is pessimism about the auto industry. The auto industry has done a very poor job in explaining the problems it's having with its chip shortages and other component shortages. And even though the auto industry is doing a little bit better this year, there's this view that no one's building automobiles, and ergo, no one needs platinum and palladium. It's probably not true. So, you know, from a longer-term perspective, we do think that the platinum price will break back above $1,000. But for now, you've got some bearishness there that is pushing the platinum price down, even as the palladium price falls. I think that, and, you know, you talk to the auto industry, they're talking about this chip shortage continuing to have problems for a long time to come, well into the second or even now maybe the third quarter of 2022. And some guys are even talking about 2023 still having constraints on component supplies. So that, I think, is being reflected in bearishness on both platinum and palladium. Longer term, you know, I don't see palladium rising to new highs. You are seeing reverse substitution back into platinum, more platinum use and less palladium use in auto catalysts. That should push platinum prices higher at some point, but maybe not in the immediate future.
Well, just one more on platinum, Jeff, and that is that for the longest time, platinum held a premium to gold. I was joking with somebody the other day. When you think about when I got credit cards 20-some years ago in college, I was excited to go from a silver member to a gold member and then that elite platinum status, because platinum as a metal is more rare than gold. And it is a precious metal in the sense it's stockpiled as bullion, as coins, and as bars, but it's really more of an industrial metal. Do you think it'll ever regain that premium on gold, or have things shifted now due to the financial backdrop in the world?
I think it probably stays at a discount to gold. It's funny because, yeah, my first day at J. Aaron, when I went to J. Aaron to work in their research department, was the first trading day of December, and platinum had fallen to a discount to gold. And yeah, my first hour on the job, they said, so, you know, normally they said, what do you think about this? You know, platinum's at a discount to gold, and we would normally buy platinum and sell gold. I said, don't do that. I mean, gold is relatively high. It was about $600 at the time, I think, because we were in a recession and we had 14% inflation and U.S. hostages in Iran and a variety of other things going on, Soviet troops in Afghanistan, quadrupling of oil prices. So it makes sense that gold would be strong and platinum is weak because it's used in the auto industry, which is in a recession. So no, don't do that. And they took my advice and made a lot of money. And it was about 2 or 3 years before platinum restored its premium to gold, by which time the auto industry was recovering and a lot of those economic and political problems had been resolved or dealt with to some varying extent, degrees of success. So I think that I look at platinum and its fortunes are tied to the platinum industry, to the auto industry. I think people underestimate the long-term usage of petroleum in vehicles. You know, if you look at the IEA, International Energy Association Agency, or CPM Group's projections for the auto population over the next 30 years, we still have a significant number of vehicles burning petroleum 30 years from now. You know, I know politicians say they want to get rid of them in 10 or 15 years, but logistically that just can't happen, you know, for a variety of real world reasons. So you look at the auto industry, they're going to need PGMs, platinum, palladium, and rhodium to clean up emissions for at least the next 3 decades and maybe probably a lot longer. And I think the markets have written off petroleum-powered vehicles and PGMs use in them to an excessive degree. And at some point over the next several years, that's probably going to correct, at which point people are going to realize, you know, the world doesn't have enough platinum, newly refined platinum coming out of mines to meet future demand. And when that happens, I do think that the platinum price rises. But at the same time, I'm looking at record high gold prices. So I think that gold will probably maintain its premium over platinum for the foreseeable future.
All right, Jeff, before I get you out of here, there's one thing you alluded to a number of times when we've talked about all these precious metals is that you see politics as being a potential key driver next year, not just in the U.S., globally, but U.S. is always a main consideration. What are some of the changes? What could come out of the political sphere that you think does change investor sentiment?
Well, I think one of the things that we're looking at is the current situation with Russia, the Ukraine, and the U.S./NATO. You know, I mean, that's some real saber rattling there, and both sides are very intransigent. The Russians really don't want NATO supporting or defending Ukraine. They don't want the Ukraine joining NATO. And NATO is basically saying, you know, up yours, you know. Well, actually, the head of NATO, NATO's leaders are meeting in Riga, Latvia this week. And, you know, Latvia, Estonia, and Lithuania used to be Soviet republics. Now they're members of NATO. And NATO is purposefully meeting right there, like, you know, a couple hundred miles from Moscow. And Putin's saying, hey, we don't like NATO being that close to Russia. And the head of NATO said, Russia doesn't have a veto power. You know, whether we allow Ukraine into NATO is a decision that the Ukraine and NATO will make, not Russia. And that is a very intransigent area. Yeah, Russia's got 90,000 troops on the border of the Ukraine poised to come in. There's a question as to what NATO would do. And the somewhat feckless leader of NATO this week, when he was asked, what would you do, said, oh, well, we'll impose more stringent sanctions. Well, that doesn't scare Russia, because if you want to impose sanctions on Russia, they'll just cut off the oil and gas to Europe at the beginning of winter. You know, so that could be a very nasty situation. Then you have the U.S. saber rattling with China, and China responding in kind. So you have two, you know, aircraft carrier strike forces from the U.S. and another one from England in the waters off of China. And there's all kinds of saber rattling there, which could be reflected in greater trade sanctions and tensions, which could then further exacerbate supply chain issues. So I think those are two of the big issues. And then obviously you have the U.S. elections, and you might see some very interesting indictments related to the January 6th insurrection attempt. And even if you don't see the indictments, you probably see all kinds of very interesting revelations. So I think that U.S. politics are going to be very unsettled and unsettling, and you're going to still see a very much of a deadlocked Congress.
All right, Jeff, we're going to wrap it up here. Always great chatting with you, buddy. We're going to have you back on before the end of the year for more of a year-end recap, but we really did recap some of the moves in the metals, and I think maybe provide some hope heading into next year. But fact of the matter is, unfortunately, the way we ended November and how we've even started December has been on a bit of a weak foot. So let's see how tax loss selling plays out. Let's see how the other markets continue to do into next year, because sentiment, unfortunately, for the metals is quite low. And that is, as you've outlined, as prices are still in a historic level, quite high. But it's a downtrend that matters for investors right now, unfortunately. Jeff, thank you as always for your time. Again, Jeff is the managing partner over at the CPM Group. We'll chat again in another few weeks. Jeff, have a great rest of your weekend.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout. Your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. In these last two segments, we're going to shift our focus more specifically to some companies that are catching the eye of some of the analysts that we bring on a very regular basis on our show. We're kicking off the second half of this hour with Brian London, editor of the Gold Newsletter, also our host down at the New Orleans Investment Conference. Now, Brian, look, we've had a lot of analysis on the precious metals week after week, and the problem being that precious metals keep on going lower, and there are so many question marks heading into next year. It's really a guessing game. Not to say that it isn't always a guessing game, but look, the fact of the matter is we keep on hearing stocks are on sale, and unfortunately, many of them keep on getting a bit shorter. So what I want to do here is focus more on the companies that are catching your eye, because look, there's a lot of resource companies out there, and there are a lot that have moved down. So in terms of what's on your radar here, Brian, care to share at least one stock to kick us off here, please?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the bigger picture is we need something to get gold going, and who knows what that's going to be. There are a few potential catalysts in the near term, but everybody's kind of expecting or not that excited about gold. It seems that everybody's bearish. And although that would be a contrarian's dream scenario and perhaps, you know, point toward this being a good buying opportunity, and it is, I think it is over the long term, we just don't know what the catalyst is going to be to get gold started again. So in that kind of an environment, if you're in the junior mining game, you're looking for companies that are going to be delivering expiration news or perhaps production news or going into production and represent good values right now. In other words, they have some catalysts that are somewhat immune or not totally dependent upon the gold trends. And, you know, we've been finding a few of those right now. that are values. I just came out with a recommendation of Gold Shore Resources. This is kind of a value play because they've got millions of ounces at the Moss Lake project, and they have exploration potential. And they're going to be updating the economics on that toward current gold prices, which of course looked better a month ago when I first looked at the company than they are look right now. But the economics are still probably good and good enough at current gold prices, and they've got some great exploration potential. So that's one that I like. You know, another one I like that's delivering news, should have been delivering news in midsummer, but because of the delays in the labs, is only now delivering news, is Cassiar Gold. I own that one. I do not personally own or have any interest in Gold Shore, but I do own Cassiar. It is a company that has great project in BC, and it is delivering some great drill results on two different projects on a really large land position. One that's high grade underground that's been delivering some blockbuster assays, and one that is bulk tonnage, about 1 million ounce resources on the bulk tonnage open pit project. And they're delivering some great assays now from that project that are above the average ore grade. So fairly high grade for an open pit. So those are two that I've recently been very high on.
Yeah, Brian, we've had both Marco on the show from Cassiar and Brett on the show, Brett Richards from Gold Shore. And it seems like in both cases, they have assets underpinning their valuations as far as ounces in the ground, but they're also doing pretty intense exploration activities too, which is that blue sky upside. In the case of Gold Shore, for example, I know they have between their measured and indicated and their inferred a combined global resource of close to 4 million ounces as an example, but they also are doing a 100,000 meter drill program with four rigs. So is that what has your attention, that exploration upside on both of those?
Yeah, you'll be hard pressed to find that much drilling being done by anybody, even the mid-tier or major producers. And to have that kind of a focus on a already large scale project. So you've got best of both worlds. You've got the, as you mentioned, the underpinning of a very large gold resource, which gives it optionality if and when we see the metals market take off. But you've also got a guarantee that a lot of news is coming out, and the greater potential, that much meterage of getting some kind of a hit that's going to really attract the market's attention. So, yeah, that those are the key factors in that company. And they really launched the company earlier this year at prices that are, you know, higher than where we are right now, generally speaking. So a lot of smart people bought into this story at significantly higher prices. So you can actually get in cheaper than they did.
Brian, what do you think moves the needle here? Because this is a big drill program and the company does already have 4 million ounces. As you guys have outlined, those ounces right around a gram per ton. Do you think the company really needs a high grade hit here? Or does it move the needle growing this 4 million ounce resource to 5 million ounces, 6 million ounces, whatever that number might be?
Yeah, I think it's good, decent results, hopefully higher than their average grades they're getting now, but a long trend. So you look at the big picture and you look at the upside of growing the resource into something really world class. You know, you want to, in this kind of a situation, always find a potential starter pit resource that can, you know, pay back the economics very quickly. Also, another catalyst for them is reworking those economics at current gold prices. And I think, you know, that's the kind of thing that could help at least get institutional interest in the story.
Well, Brian, just a follow-up question, not necessarily just on Gold Shore and Cassiar, but on all these kind of development stage stories where they have ounces in the ground, maybe they've got an economic study out, maybe they've just got a resource estimate out, but there are maybe a dozen or two dozen companies that have massive drill programs, 60,000 meters, 100,000 meters, 200,000 meters, some big drill programs. One of the trends that some people have pointed out over the last couple of years is they've grown their market cap by drilling, but they've kind of lost investors along the way, at least retail investors that are looking for those sexy high grade hits or really long intercepts of bulk tonnage material. But then when they put out release after release after release, some companies are drilling 10,000 meters a month. it just kind of flatlines and goes sideways. And we see the market cap gradually grow over time, but not the share price. Is there a risk from companies that are doing these big drill programs that they don't deliver enough value to the marketplace to offset the money that was raised to drill all these?
Yeah, that's a great point. We've all seen those stories, and, you know, without mentioning names, but there are a few that really just stick out like sore thumbs over the past few years that have grown their market caps tremendously, but not their share price. Nobody's really benefited from it at all. And they've built resources and they've built optionality, and they're waiting for the day when that will be respected by the market. But it's hard when you've built up such a large market cap, you lose that kind of torque, you know, the potential to really increase largely. So you do have to look out for that. Some of these companies like Goldshore, they raised a lot of money earlier in the year. They just completed another $10 million raise. And that's probably undoubtedly a good reason, other as well as market sentiment for the metals, why it's sitting here at about the same share price that as it was, you know, a year ago when it came public. That said, they've got a lot of money in the bank now, and I would not anticipate another financing for some time. So that's, you know, should be a good entry point. If you want to stick with this story for a year or 2 years, it should be worth a lot more and have a significantly higher share price a year or two down the line.
Brian, can you give us a little bit more color to in Cassiar Gold? Because we, as Shad said, we have had Marco on the show, and the company already does have a million ounce resource, but they are out there fairly aggressively trying to build ounces here. So this is maybe a bit more of a straightforward story because they don't already have the 4 million ounces in the ground. What do you think moves the needle for Cassiar?
Yeah, drill results. We saw the share price get up almost to $1 a couple of weeks ago on some really great drill results. And they can deliver those kinds of drill results. At Cassiar South, they've got more of an orogenic type deposit that has tremendous upside of high grade and could be analogous to some of the greatest deposits in the world, just doesn't have the size just yet, and has an historic resource, small but extremely high grade resource. We're talking 15, 20 grams per ton type material that can just needs to be drilled with the truth machine. And figure it out. They've got results coming from that resource as well. On Cassiar North, where the bulk tonnage project is, they're following up on a lot of historic holes and expanding a little bit. It's more infill than it is step out, but they're stepping out a little bit. They're drilling some gaps in the previous resource, and the drilling that they have that they're putting out right now is high confidence drilling. They really have a good feeling that they're going to be able to deliver some eye-popping numbers because they've got holes that are on about 100 meter centers, so they're going between them to increase the confidence in the resource. But they have a good feeling because it is a very consistent deposit that they're going to be able to put out some nice numbers for the market, and in effect not just increase confidence in the resource from inferred and going toward indicated, but also increase the resource itself because they are filling in some gaps. So I like that because I'm very confident that they're going to be able to keep delivering good results to the market. They also have a lot of targets on that project, on the Cassiar land position, where they have not even touched with the drill bit. So I think there's a longer term story here as well. There's another project that they have that they'll probably be drilling early in the year, earlier than they'll be able to get back to the Cassiar project. And they like that as well. So lots of news, fairly well funded, some great geological talent on working on the project.
Well, Brian, I appreciate you sharing both those with our audience on Goldshore Resources and Cassiar Gold as two kind of advanced explorers slash developers that are growing through the drill bit aggressively, but also have ounces in the ground that are underpinning them. We were talking off mic, though, that another category of mining stocks that you like are these pre-production sweet spot stories as they're moving into production. And you had mentioned a company to us. Would you feel comfortable sharing that one with our audience?
Yeah, Trigon Metals, they're actually beginning production right now. The share price has increased a good bit. but it's come back over the last month. About a month ago, they were trading, I believe, for about 69 cents. The share price was about 69 cents a share. Now it's down around 44 or so as they're entering production. They should be able to deliver free cash flow, significant free cash flow, on an annual run rate that is around $15 million to $20 million or so. And the market cap's about $69 million right now. It's producing fairly high grade from an existing open pit. It's kind of a rejuvenating an existing project. And they've got about a 60-year mine life at the current rates of production that will be producing this kind of significant cash flow. That implies, of course, that they can increase production rates without much of an impact to the mine life and bring some of that production forward. That's what the company plans to do. In addition, they have some great exploration projects or targets, not only here in Namibia where their mine is, but also in Morocco. So I expect some exploration news as well.
Brian, do you see them as a takeover target because of the fact that they're in some of the jurisdictions that aren't as well known? Could they still be taken over by maybe a handful of the majors that might be interested in those areas?
Maybe, but they're so small right now, I don't believe that they're on the major's radar screen. They need to produce, or they will be producing, cash flow and in the near term, which I think is the big near-term trigger. But they need to start proving up exploration potential and resource potential by additional drilling. And that, I think, is the next step that they'll have to achieve before they really catch the eye of the majors. In the meantime, though, it will be hard for the market to ignore the kind of cash flow I see this company putting out in 2022.
Well, Brian, on companies like that, where they're going to have some organic, you know, revenues coming in from their own production, but they also have all these exploration sites, do you like that kind of a business model where a company starts small, then incrementally grows their production profile, but also possibly they grow through acquisition of their own, or they at least just bring their secondary and tertiary projects into production? Do you like that kind of a business model in general from some of these smaller scale growth-oriented producers?
Generally, no, which makes you wonder why I like Trigon. Typically, what you find in those kinds of situations is that they're trying to develop a very small deposit and just get in production because it's easy and they don't have to go through a feasibility study and all they have to do is raise $10 or $15 million, et cetera, et cetera. What attracted me to Trigon is that the resource comes from a previously producing mine that they simply had to rehabilitate. Their cost to do that was under $10 million, and they have been able to do that and have been able to finance that process of getting back into production through some offtake agreements that I think are advantageous to the company. So, and that resource is already existing and already fairly large. They also have about a 30-kilometer trend along a valley that they completely control. And it certainly seems very likely, and the showings that they have along that 30-kilometer trend are very similar to what they already have in the resource. So very realistic exploration potential and size potential as they work along this trend.
All right, Brian, we'll wrap it up here. Thank you for your insights into those three companies. If anybody wants more information on those companies or has any questions regarding some of the nuances within the work that they are doing, feel free to email us either fleck@kereport.com or shad@kereport.com, and we will bounce those questions off Brian and also reach out to the companies. Brian, thanks for taking time on this weekend show. I hope you have a great rest of your weekend.
Great. Thank you, guys.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
All right, welcome back here to wrap up the weekend edition of the KE Report. We're going to continue to focus on resource stocks as we are chatting right now with Giant Bhandari. He's well known on our site, and to all of you that are not up to date on Giant, he is a consultant for a lot of the large money players in the resource sector, also a large investor himself. And that's why I really like focusing on the stocks that Giant is focused on, because Giant, you're out there looking for value, looking for arbitrage opportunities. And right now, all I'm hearing about the resource stocks is that everything's cheap or everything is on sale. And that's understandable because of the fact that a lot of these stocks have really pulled back this year. It started about halfway through last year, and boy, oh boy, some of the stocks, even some of the IPOs in the sector, they're down 70 to 80% from their highs. So the comment that things are cheap, that is true, but everything is cheap. So the market is also telling us that this is just a tougher market. You need to be more selective, and I think you need to be positioned in those stocks that could bounce back first when we do get another upleg here. Giant, take us through what you've been doing with your portfolio. Have you been buying? Have you been selling? Have you been waiting on the sideline?
Corey, I have been using up virtually all my cash over the last few days. I think when the market is fearful, I want to use up my cash, particularly in buying companies that I think are getting underpriced for no good reason. So I'm focusing currently on companies that are falling because of tax loss selling. And I have a couple of companies, if you are interested in listening about them. I think their share prices were very nice early in the year. The share prices have fallen. And I see nothing wrong with those two companies. And I think that those two companies are generating good value within those companies, which means that once the tax loss selling is over, I should be able to see an improvement in their share price, or I should say a significant improvement in their share price, even if gold price does not recover and even if this COVID situation does not improve. Although from whatever I have read, COVID situation is actually not as grim as what the market was thinking it was like yesterday or the day before yesterday.
Yeah, boy, oh boy, we've gotten a lot of volatility on the back of this new COVID variant, but let's focus on some of these companies. Please share with us one of the companies, at least right now, that has your eye that clearly has pulled back, much like a lot of the other stocks in the sector.
So this one company that I want to talk about is Montage Gold. I did talk with you about it in the past as well, and its share price has fallen since then. This company has a gold project in Ivory Coast, and the project's name is Kone Gold Project. The share price is 64 cents. Now, if I use the current gold price and I use a 20% discount rate, I get about 200% upside in owning this company, which is a very good upside in my view. Now, this is a company which will hopefully produce more than 200,000 ounces of gold a year for about 15 years, actually. So that means that this project will be of interest to majors in today's environment where mergers and acquisitions are happening. So a large players, I think, should be looking at this company. And I think the story is not just what I have told you. They have a very large land package and they have had successes drilling outside the known resources. So this project should actually expand, and that will be a free upside over a very nice upside that I already see in Montage Gold.
Yeah, Giant, I'm also a shareholder in Montage Gold, for full disclosure, and I would want to know, you know, are you more interested in the 3 million ounces of gold that they have in the ground as an optionality and an underpinning of value, or do you like that they've got still a lot of exploration upside because they've just recently, as of September 8th, doubled their land position? So are you looking at it more as a growth story, or are you looking at it more as an optionality story because of the ounces in the ground?
I am not looking at it as an optionality story at all. I'm just looking at my spreadsheet on a Kone Gold project. And what I see is that at the current gold price, my IRR should be about 80%. this is already a very, now, of course, it's at a PEA stage, so you are not sure about the valuations. You're less sure about the valuation at this stage. But I like the management. I think they are very competent people. Even at the current gold price, this is a very economic project and gives me a very nice upside. And then I have the free optionality from the extra land packages that they have acquired. And actually, within the land package that they already had, they have had good successes outside the known resources. So the next PEA, if suppose they come out with the next PEA, should be an improvement on what they already have. So again, I see at least a very nice upside in this company.
So Giant, I'm actually going through my notes on Montage Gold as well. And let's compare where the company stands market cap wise, right under just under $70 million. But the pre-production capital for this Koné Gold project, little short of $500 million. So this is going to be tough for the company to raise that money. I'm guessing you don't necessarily want to see them go through the construction phase. This is more of a takeout target.
Well, absolutely. There is no way they can raise $500 million when their market cap is only $70 or $80 million. Yeah, this is a buyout story in my view, although every company like this has to go through, a drama, or they want to pose themselves as a company that is going to go into production. But the management of the company is basically an exploration team. They are excellent at exploring in Africa, and I think their interest would be to sell the project when the time is right.
Well, Giant, on a company like this, and this could be true of other companies too, when they have a big CapEx they need to get a mine to, constructed and into production, are you also open to a company bringing on a large strategic partner, either in a JV or someone that takes a strategic stake that would help them raise the money, or partnering with a streaming company to help raise the funds? Are you open to other options besides them just selling it outright? Or do you like this, them selling the company or getting taken over as a cleaner exit?
Well, I prefer a cleaner exit, because when there is not a clean exit, it tells me that management is likely entrenched. They want to sell the company, but they still want to keep getting their salaries. So, but that's of course not always true, but I prefer a cleaner exit. I do the same thing with my portfolio as well. If I decide on selling a particular share, I sell everything of that company. I don't want to hold on to 25% of shareholding in a company once I have invested in it. And similarly, when a management is running a company, I either want them to sell the whole company, keep the company 100% with themselves, rather than playing games about bringing in different partners, which actually complicates the valuation as well. So for me as an investor, it just becomes too complex, and maybe then I wouldn't bother looking at it.
Okay. Giant, appreciate your insights on Montage Gold. We'll probably reach out to the company too and get a general update, but we have had them on the show more the middle of this year. Any other stocks you care to share with us that you think are more undervalued than the rest?
Another company that I'm buying right now is a company called GCM Mining, and the ticker is GCM. Now, I'm not buying GCM share. What I'm buying is GCM warrants, whose ticker is GCM.WT.B, and it's trading at just under $3. Now, the interesting thing about GCM Mining is that they are producing more than 200,000 ounces currently, and they should be producing about close to 500,000 ounces in about 2 or 3 years' time. They came out with a PEA on their Toroparu project in Guyana this morning. I haven't had a chance to look at it in great details, but my quick read told me that this PEA is an improvement of about 15 to 20% over the earlier PEA. So I'm already extra happy with what they have come out with. And I was already investing in GCM despite this PEA. Now, remember, this company has market capitalization very roughly of about $500 million, and they could be generating close to $100 million in cash already when they are very well cashed up as well. They have, I think, close to $200 million in cash sitting with them, which also it means that they are cashed up to put their Toro Paru project in Guyana into production. So this is like a very good combination. Now, the upside might not be as good as what I see in Montage Gold, but I see a very good upside in the warrants and a safe upside because my downside is protected because of several reasons that I just mentioned, which is that they are generating a great amount of cash. They are very well cashed up. And they have a very good project now, which is a project that Zijing might be interested in buying, actually. So they have good two or three valuations underpinning the value of the company.
Yeah, Giant. And if I remember correctly, GCM also went on an acquisition earlier this year and picked up Goldex Mining. And in the process of that, there were other companies like Silvercorp and Zijin Mining and other companies kind of in a bidding war, so to speak, which we don't see as often these days. So there's clearly some interest in these assets. Do you think that could be representative of maybe a future bidding war or at least a future acquisition of their projects by an even larger producer?
Oh, absolutely. I'm not sure, Shad, right now how much of the insiders own of GCM Mining right now, how much controlling interest they have. But clearly, GCM Mining is a company that a major would be interested in. The only problem with GCM Mining, and it's actually the same with Montage Gold as well, is that they are in relatively less secure jurisdictions. So GCM is in Colombia. Colombia has had a lot of social problems recently. There has been a lot of supply chain problems in Colombia. And the Toro Paru project is in Guyana, which is, again, not seen as one of the better jurisdictions. And maybe that is the reason why Chinese might be more interested in this company than, let's say, Barrick or other major companies, because you probably need to deal with the locals in ways that a major company like Barrick might not be interested in.
John, taking a step back here and looking at GCM with a $500 million market cap that is Canadian, a little under that, and the cash flow that they are generating, you mentioned off mic about $100 million a year in cash flow, plus this measured and indicated resource of 8.4 million ounces, this doesn't line up, or I guess this just speaks to how undervalued some of these stocks are, or I guess to another point, what the market is truly valuing ounces in the ground for right now. What's going to cause that re-rate in this stock? Is it going to be bringing it into production? Is it going to be some other exploration success, or is it simply just a better gold market?
Oh, I think the sentiment can change overnight in companies like these because they are so undervalued that they should just go up for no good reason except that they have so much of values underpinning their corporations. This can change overnight, and we have seen it again and again that companies that stagnate for months and maybe for a whole year suddenly go up by 50 or 100% over the next over a few days' time. So this can happen anytime. I think all the stars are aligned, in my view, except that the market has come to recognize that alignment collectively, and that can happen without any change in gold price or without any change in general sentiment. It can just happen overnight for no other visible reason.
Don't we need some sort of a change in sentiment, though? Because I feel like we've been waiting for more money to flow into some of these stocks. And fact of the matter is these stocks have continued to drift.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we should, sentiment change will be a good icing on the cake for me. But I should be able to make money irrespective of the change in sentiment. So I am not going to bet in hope that the sentiment might change. I should just make money anyway.
All right, Giant, we're going to wrap it up there. Thank you for your time on this weekend show. I hope everybody enjoyed those comments on those two companies. Again, Montage Gold and GCM Mining.
Giant, thank you again for the time on the weekend show. Everybody, I hope you enjoyed this weekend show. And please go back through the week, listen to the daily editorials and the company updates that we are recording. And please share your thoughts with us. Chad and I can be reached at any time through email at fleck@kereport.com and chad@kereport.com. We love hearing from each and every one of you. Giant, thanks again for your time. Have a great rest of your weekend.
Thank you very much.